internet is about, okay? And really, we're going to start off with how your organization got started. How, you know, I know you said we were talking about it earlier, back in 2013, or was it 14?
I think it was a little earlier than that, but I didn't look it up. There's actually a predecessor organization.
Okay. All right. We're going to have her change her mic for a minute. Try that other mic over there, okay? Yes, but
get rid of the other one?
No, yeah, okay.
That sounds very loud to me. Okay.
All right. Okay. And we have a little technical difficulty here. Ms. Daniels is being the technician as well as the host. Okay. All right. So you were telling us about your organization and how it got started.
Okay, we had a predecessor organization that I came to town about 20, 21 years ago, and when I arrived, there was a pretty active group called Dearborn Area Ministerial Association,
mm-hmm.
and they met over lunch for a couple of hours, had programs, and it was quite an active organization at that time. And then over the years, there were struggles. Not as many people were showing up, and it became less and less active. Even at that time, although it was called Ministerial Association, which sounds more like a Christian organization, but there were a number of Muslims who were attending the meetings then,
right,
as well. So the name didn't really accurately reflect the composition of the group.
All right.
So we were struggling with, what do we do with this? People aren't showing up. Nobody wants to help plan the programs and so on. So we gathered a group of, I'm thinking it was 6 or 8 people. I remember a meeting, that one happened to take place at Littlefield around a table. And
all right,
we had a couple of Muslims who were part of that group. And we explored, well, how might we reinvent ourselves?
All right.
And that resulted in a name change, but also a narrowing of the vision. We can't be maybe everything that we were before. Maybe there isn't a need for that, but really to be specifically an interfaith network that reflects really the community that we live in, and then also and having the mission of building bridges.
All right. Now, I'm so busy fiddling with the dials and stuff. What were you before, exactly? What was the thrust before? What was the group's thrust before you became the interfaith?
It was the Dearborn Area Ministerial Association.
Okay, all right. And then the purpose or the vision or the mission for that organization was what?
I think it was similar to ministerial associations in many communities.
Okay.
It would bring the clergy, but some active lay people as
right.
well. But
okay.
Clergy and active lay participants to together.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it is about building relationships.
All right.
But there would also be programs that would be of interest to people. Somebody did a pilgrimage someplace and showed a slideshow as the
all
program
right.
one time.
All right.
Another time there would be maybe things that were going on in the community that they asked guest speakers to come
mm-hmm.
for. At that point, there was usually a chaplain from Oakwood Hospital that was involved, and they would host us there once a year, and it would have to do with something that would be medical or care-centered, but that would be of interest to the clergy and other
okay.
religious people.
What I wanted to know, now that we got a kind of what your organization was about, was there any particular crisis or something that happened in the community that kind of help to add to your change of reinventing yourself? Was there something going on in particular, or was it just you're wanting to become more viable in the community?
Well, the desire is always to be more viable, to contribute to the society, to the community. I wish I'd thought to actually check some dates, because
there won't be a test, so go ahead.
So I can't really speak to the dates, but I
all
remember
right.
that there were some things that were going on. If you recall, the Arab American Arab festival that
right.
used to be that take place every year in Dearborn, and that
yes.
there were some outside groups that came trying
yes.
to instigate some things to get footage to put
mm-hmm.
on their websites and raise funds to show. To show Muslims in a bad light.
All right.
And then there was there was a Terry Jones, was, you know, billed himself as a pastor.
The I remember that one.
Burning pastor from Florida.
Yes, I remember
and
that one.
And he made a series of trips to Dearborn. And there was, like, he was going to be, he was going to demonstrate outside the Islamic Center of America. So I think it was the day before, there was, because we had the relationships and the Interfaith Leadership Council of Metro Detroit got involved too.
Yes,
and there was a group of clergy from Detroit
right.
that showed up. So it's a beautiful picture of clergy and other people of faith gathered around the Islamic Center of America.
Right.
And, you know, there were Christians and Muslims and Jews, and I think probably maybe a Sikh or anyway, people from various religious traditions that were all there to show their solidarity.
All right.
We had a program inside first, and then we came out and formed, you know, and circled the mosque.
Okay.
And so this was all either toward the end of the Ministerial Association group or near the beginning of the I just don't remember the dates.
All right.
But relationships.
Yes.
Regardless of what the name of the group was at the time, it we had formed relationships and we're building solidarity so that if something happens in one of our houses of worship, we all want to be there to show our support in various ways.
All right. And I'm hearing now that it seems like you were had many, many hats. It's like for a while you might have been an advocate, then others were you were supporting, and then but then I think you came out to where you actually said building bridges was your final mission. How has that been going now since you've been doing that?
Well, it's hard to measure in precise ways, but we have friendships.
All right.
And we try to find ways to do things with each other. And so some of it is like we do informally between our various houses of worship because we do have these friendships. And so there are times when, like, we get invited to the various mosques in the area,
right.
especially during Ramadan. We get kind of busy getting to, and we eat very well during Ramadan. We get invited for iftars at the various houses of worship, and we have Muslims that show up pretty much every year for Christmas Eve service at Littlefield, and I think at some of the other churches. They like our service actually happens to be a Lessons in Carols, so there's a lot of music.
All right.
And so because we have the relationships, I think there's a fair amount of trust, and so people can feel free to come and see how we celebrate our special seasons, just like we go during Ramadan and at other times to experience that, so that we better understand each other, and they know that we're not trying to convert them, and so they can trust us to just come and be a part of what we do there.
Okay, now I hear the word trust, and I think that has a lot to do with everything about what you're building the bridges. It has to all do about trust. You were saying, I'm sorry, I got this kind of cough going on. You were saying that part of what you had to do was to work through the community trust in your organization, that the community itself had to develop a trust among yourselves before you could start trying to reach out to others. Can you tell us about some of that experience?
Well, I think that's a gradual thing. I think we have, you know, I feel good about the level of trust that we do have in our community. It's the perception from outside the community that is more often the problem.
Okay.
I think those of us who are involved in interfaith relationships and doing things together, or maybe we're kind of proud, I think, of how we do work together and care about each other, despite some misperceptions from outside the community, that when something happens on the national front, for instance, of course, some of us have said we've been here gathered on the library steps or at the library in the too often when there are tragedies that we gather together,
right.
And like Las Vegas was one, but that we had people from different faiths gathered together and just lamenting together, mm-hmm. Expressing our care and our frustration and our sadness, but together as a community that included at least people from the three Abrahamic communities.
Okay. Now, within, you know, as Christians, we have Episcopalians, Presbyterians, mm-hmm. Baptists, Church of God, yada, yada, yada. And mm-hmm. Let me stop because some of them are, you know, make the distinctions.
Yes.
Within the Muslim community, what we perceive as Muslim, mm-hmm. is there that same kind of division? And then was there part of a struggle of trying to establish that kind of trust given those different differences of how they approach their faith and things like that?
Well, I'm not the one to speak with authority about that, but you can have a Muslim in to talk more about okay. that. But I am aware that, like, in the world, the majority group is Sunni. Mm-hmm. But here in Dearborn, we have many people who would identify as Shia. And yet, there are people, then I have a friend that... that says that they're a sushi family.
I remember I read that.
And it's like because the younger generation have intermarried, and so right. a person from the Sunni tradition has married someone who's from the Shia community, and their children just raised as like, well, we're just Muslims.
Right. Okay. Now, your mission is has it changed any since the organization's or since you're that reinventing of yourself, or has it still morally still in the same focus?
Well, I think we're not done building all the bridges that can be built, and so and caring about each other. Those are ongoing things, and
right.
I think the relationships are deeper. The community can be broader.
Mm-hmm.
We can include more people. And some people have asked, like, well, what events do you have? And honestly, we have two major events that our group sponsors. One is a community Dearborn area that includes Dearborn Heights and mm-hmm. whoever else, Martin Luther King convocation on the Sunday before the Martin Luther King holiday.
Okay.
And that's, you know, we have at least three or four different religious traditions represented each time for that. We have a keynote speaker and so on. And it's a fair amount of work to organize it and to try to make sure that it comes in it. We always hope we're under 90 minutes so that people will stay for the fellowship time and make some new friends
and
talk about how we can work together. And then we have an observance on the National Day of Prayer,
right.
which is very intentionally, anything that we do as a group is intentionally interfaith in nature. And
all
so
right.
even though in some parts of the country, there are people who say, well, that we're a Judeo-Christian nation. There are people who keep saying that and saying so. And we actually had somebody that approached our Dhamma group back in the day, inviting us to be a part of the National Day of Prayer program that they were setting up, but they intentionally did not want to include Muslims. And we said, but here, you know, we had Muslims in our meeting when they came to speak to us. And we said, no, we can't be a part of that. And actually that was the beginning of, by the next year, we were having our own interfaith National Day of Prayer observance.
All right. Now, why the Martin Luther King Day? Because we're talking mostly, question, why would Martin Luther King, because I noticed when you were saying you plead that day as the first day as a religious observance, how did your mm-hmm. thinking, what was the thinking about Martin Luther King if you were dealing mostly with the Muslim population, that kind of thing, what was your thinking about that?
Oh, see, to us it seemed like kind of a no-brainer.
Okay.
In the Muslim community, Martin Luther King is a very important figure.
Okay.
And we all care, you know, our faith traditions all care very much about justice.
Okay.
And so, you know, our local high school young people have planned Martin Luther King observances
right.
on the holiday. I've been to those, and totally student led. And it was amazing. There were kids who were, you know, like who were Muslim and Christian, and there were some Hispanic kids, a few African. So it was really an expression of the beloved community. And that's when we have our Martin Luther King observance, the theme always has beloved community as part of the name of the theme.
Right.
And it's a way that we can be together. not just to remember Dr. King and what he did before he was killed, but to really, to how do we continue to live into this vision of a beloved community? And we all care about that.
And, you know, it is interesting that historically, just as part of Martin Luther King's focus was more of a rainbow, more of a comprehensive inclusiveness, I mean, that may be a good word, that was part of his thrust, that what has started out to be a black movement, now, and I, you know, that's my editorializing, towards the end, he was more of, like, what you just said, justice for and for all people, and justice, it was the world, you know, the, and looking at a world application and inclusion part of that. So it wasn't supposed to be a trick question, but it was, it was but I think many of the community did, because Dr. King didn't get a chance to put that, you know, make that as much of known because he was killed at the time and he was making that kind of a transition, if you will, that it was interesting that you would then, because that was exactly what it was. He had moved to where it was a worldwide thing. And some of the ones who followed him after that did the same thing.
Well, the Poor People's Campaign, which we have an anniversary coming up of that, and you know Reverend William Barber was here a few months ago in the Metro Detroit area, and you know, and that was an interfaith gathering. I went to that. It was down at Wayne State, and so Mother's Day, watch for this come, but that will be, you know, that will be an interfaith kind of effort as well. And if you think about Dr. King, really, the last year or two of his life, we try not to, you know, people that sort of make it sound, you know, like Dr. King, they make it, some observances might end up being kind of nice, you know, it's like it's just all get together and and sing We Shall Overcome, but to really remember what he was working on and what the vision was, and then to challenge people, where then work is certainly not done yet. And so to the challenge of people to live further into that beloved community, to work for justice, and you know, the last years of his life, he was really challenging the militarism and materialism, and so that's what we try to challenge people to do when we gather.
All right. Now, so what are some of the other challenges that your organization has at this time?
Well, one of them is, like, I think some of us have bigger dreams than we're able to do anything about because we're a small group.
Right.
You know, it's a lot of us are clergy from various traditions, and, you know, we're serving churches and other churches, mosques, and so on. And it's really, it was hard to carve out big chunks of time and energy along with everything else that we need to do. So we've been trying to involve more lay people from our various, our various communities as well. And, but we're a small group. It doesn't take a very big table for us to sit down together, the ones of us who show up on usually the third Tuesday in the afternoon at 2 o'clock. We have a Facebook page and we announce our meetings, and we are not a closed or exclusive group.
You can go right ahead and announce it, okay? So go ahead and let the audience know, you know, you meet on what, the third Tuesday?
Usually third Tuesdays. In January, we usually meet on the second Tuesday so that we have a chance to meet in the place where we're going to have the, because our service, just like our meetings move around from month to month, and our the Martin Luther King observance moves around. Was it 2 years ago or last year? We were at the Islamic House of Wisdom.
All right.
Last year, we were at Bishop Ferguson's church. And I just blanked on the name of the in Dearborn Heights. This year we're going to be at Christ Episcopal.
Okay.
So so we will be meeting at Christ Episcopal in January on the second Tuesday, so that we can finish up our planning for the observance.
All right. So then, but next month your meeting is going to be on the third Tuesday, and where is that going
December.
To be? December.
It's in my phone. I don't remember. It'll be on Facebook.
All right.
And if somebody wants to, so send.
If someone wanted to contact your organization, how would they go about doing it?
Well, they could actually. pretty much every, you don't even have to be on too much on Facebook. Send me a Facebook message or a text message to me, and I would get back to you.
Okay, your handle on Facebook would be what?
Fran Hayes.
Fran Hayes. Okay.
Yeah. All right. The easiest way to find Dearborn, if you're on Facebook, Dearborn Area Interfaith Network has our Facebook page. It's not a big fancy one or anything, but it always announces our events and our meetings, and we try to share some things about interfaith efforts various places as well.
Okay. So, I noticed then that there were different things. You know, you're working for the hospitals. There's different other focuses that your organization has in addition just to building the trust issue. As a group, you also, you know, work with other kinds of endeavors. Is that true, or is that still?
Well, as I said, we some of us would like to do more than we're able to do, but we're limited by the number of people who show up and also and how much energy and time we have because of other commitments.
Okay.
So, and I think I mentioned earlier that Oakwood Hospital had hosted some of our meetings and used to send somebody. And I think there's a chaplain from there who's been trying to get with us again, who has had scheduling conflicts and hasn't. So it's not one particular organization, but just whoever is what we've had in the past, we've had a Wiccan priest. Who's attended some of our meetings and participated in events.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not exclusive. That person emailed me or contacted me some way and says, so is this only for Abrahamic religions? And I thought, oh, maybe we've got a Hindu wants to come or something.
Okay.
And I said, no, we're not just Abrahamic. It's who we happen to have
right
now. And then the person from Wicca showed up and was a contributing part of our group for a while their work schedule permitted it.
All right, now help me understand. So at the meetings, you then that's part of the bridging process. Then when you have those monthly meetings, or is that your planning kind of a thing?
Both and.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not so much either or. It's about both and.
All right.
Because we're usually working forward to whatever the next event is,
mm-hmm.
But also bringing concerns that we're aware of in the community, and but a lot of it really does have to do with when you keep showing up. There are some of us that show up pretty much every time.
Okay.
And so we've become friends.
All right.
And the getting together for an agenda and to plan things ends up being a time of building relationships as well. And you know, we'll hear about concerns in our various communities or in the greater community as well. And mm-hmm. So we share perspectives, we grow in our understanding of each other as a result of being together.
Okay. Now, you said one of your you have your monthly meetings, all right, and then you have your Martin Luther King event. Is there another event that you have during the year that we haven't discussed?
We did talk about the National Day of Prayer.
Okay,
that's always the first Thursday in May. That's
all right.
a national thing. It was decreed, I think, the time it became official in its more recent form, I think, was during Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
And then I think each year the president says,
right, right.
You know, makes it official again.
Proclamation for it. Right,
yes.
Right, right.
Yes.
Okay. And then that's the movement and stuff. Yeah. That's that type
and
of
thing. When we do that, we've been having it at the administration building in Dearborn.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time for a while, the old city hall, we would have, we would gather on the steps.
Mm-hmm.
But then the weather and some other so the last few years we've been at the administration building, and it's really interesting and neat that we have people from our various religious communities that show up, but we also usually have first responders, we have police officers and firefighters and I think at the superintendent of schools,
right.
Dr. Maleko shows up, local office holders, whoever can spare the time. And we write out a series of prayers so that we know that they're very, so that we cover all the bases in terms of local concerns, but also concerns in our nation and in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we pray for unity, for peace, for the welfare of all, that we, and with special care for poor people and marginalized peoples. And so to try to make sure that we cover all those bases, and also that we're praying prayers that everybody can be included in.
All right.
We have these prayers, and then people respond after each part of this. But so, you know, the local, one of the local imams might get up and say a prayer, a short prayer that's part of that.
Right.
And then we will respond something like, we pray with one voice.
All right.
And then a police officer will pray one of the prayers that we've sort of prescribed, and we will again say, we pray with one voice, and so on. So that it's a way that we find to be able to pray together. We all care about these things.
And then, are we talking about the National Day of Prayer, or are we talking about your monthly meetings?
Well, this is the National Day of Prayer when
okay,
we're doing
right,
it in that
okay,
particular
all
way.
Right,
yes.
Okay, all right, okay. I just wanted the audience to kind of make, I know, because we started off talking about your monthly meetings, and then we got into the other thing.
Oh, okay. Well, you'd ask about other things.
I know, and I just want to make sure that the audience didn't get lost. You know,
right.
That's because I kind of like slipped something in.
Yeah, so that's the National Day of Prayer, which is on the first Thursday of May each
right.
year.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Very, very good there. Okay. And that's kind of like, well, as I said, maybe some people like me kind of like went on a tangent there. Make sure. All right. Now, do you, is your, what's the, how large is your group? How large is the organization?
It varies by month to month. Six, seven, eight people maybe on a typical meeting.
Mm-hmm. Right, but at your events you will have about how many people?
The National Day of Prayer is not a very big attendance. It's those who came and participated, and maybe a very few others.
All right.
And sometimes we get a little discouraged about that, but then we say, you know, we all came together and prayed before the one God.
Right.
And so we just can't worry about that. But our Martin Luther King event could be, we would hope for, you know, over 100.
All right.
We hope for that. And I mean, it would be wonderful if we had hundreds. I think people were so hungry for that years ago, because I think that other than what's held at Ford, for instance,
right.
there hadn't really, at the time when we started having our interfaith Martin Luther King observance in Dearborn, there hadn't really been one that the religious community had come
right.
together to hold. And the first time, I think it was at First Methodist, and my memory is we might have had like 400 people.
Right. Okay.
But then it's like, oh, they do it every year. So if I can't make it this year, I think that's, people have gotten a little, it's less unusual now, and
there's not a crisis going on, right? You know, people tend to gather.
Depends on how you look at things.
Okay. And how you define crisis, right?
Right.
Okay. Do you, in your interacting with these different things, do you see that there might be a difference of perceptions for, say, the young adults as opposed to someone who's older, you know, the youth seeing this interfaith in one way, and as with older people see it differently? Do you see any kind of change, distinctions in that way?
Well, I think the younger people in Dearborn are used to, I mean, they kind of take it for granted that we will have things in our community that are interfaith.
Okay.
You know, they're young people tend to be pretty open, and
mm-hmm.
some things that might have been an issue for the older generations, they're they just take it for granted. Of course, we can get together and do this. Yeah.
All right. What about the Dearborn and Dearborn Heights community at large? Since there's been a change, in the population and the census. Are some of the things that you're having to address change because of, you know, that kind of a change?
Well, Dearborn has had, I don't think so, because Dearborn has for some decades had a large Muslim and Arab American population. So I don't think that the demographics have changed so much that there isn't still a need for continuing to build bridges, to come together, to work together, and so on. As individual churches, things have changed.
Okay.
For instance, because, you know, like the church that I serve at Littlefield Presbyterian Church, there was a time when there were churches, like during the time of the race rebellion and white flight and so mm-hmm. on. So a lot of the people who went to the church, they topped out at about 1,200 members in the church that I serve way back.
Okay.
And then the neighborhood changed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became apparent that there were a lot of Arab Americans moving in.
Mm-hmm.
And so back in the 60s, 70s, and so they actually did a mission study there. And it's like, should we move to the suburbs, follow a lot of our people moving to the suburbs, like some churches were doing? And what came out of their mission study was that, no, we're going to stay here and be good neighbors to whoever lives in the community.
So
that was actually, that was some really pioneering interfaith work that they called there was a pastor there, but then they knew that they needed some other leadership besides. And so they called the Reverend Bill Gepford, who had been, he and his wife had been missionaries in Lebanon, spoke Arabic.
Right.
And so they called, the church saw a need, so they brought them here.
All right.
And so they were working with Access in the very early days of Access, and worked together with people in the community to do a holiday food basket thing when it was kind of, when there wasn't a lot of that going on in other ways. And, and so they were finding way back in the 70s, 80s, were finding when that was a fairly unusual thing to do, to bring people from various traditions together.
All right.
And had the first interfaith Thanksgiving service.
Okay.
It was such a new thing that the story I've heard was like several of the local news stations showed up, and the first one was at Littlefield, and the place was packed. I've heard, and I think all the news cameras and so on probably all had to be plugged in those days.
Oh goodness!
And they blew the lights out. So, and then they moved on to a bigger church the next time. But now, various communities in the Metro Detroit area have interfaith Thanksgiving services. There isn't just one.
All right.
They've, you know, like Farmington Hills has their own, you know, different ones.
Right.
You know, we've talked here in Dearborn about our group doing something for Thanksgiving too. But then we all go, do we have the people and the energy to do that along with everything else? Well, if people want to see that happen, they can come and help us to do that. We've talked about having a meal for those who would be alone or who are in need, or having another Thanksgiving Eve service here that would be interfaith.
Right.
But we would need some help in order to pull that off.
All right. Do you get the sense, because of the politics, okay, how much is your organization involved in any kind of political arena, or just how do you approach that whole idea with all these different things that are going on with the attacks on the general Muslim population, that kind of thing? Is there anything that your organization is involved with that?
We are not a real political, although, you know, I mean, everything is political. It just has to do with the root word has to do with the city. And it's the people. And so in the sense that everything is political and we care about things and we're trying to challenge people to work together and to build relationships. So in that way, but it's political, but we don't, and like in many of our churches, we do not, at least, and I know I don't like endorse a political party or candidate from the pulpit. I may have ideas about that I will share in other settings, but but not from the pulpit. And whoever is president, whoever is governor, whoever is in power, we pray that they will lead with humility and wisdom and for the common good. I mean, that prayer doesn't change.
Okay.
All right. In that way, so we're all praying because we're all in this together. So we're praying that things will, that people will be, the people who are in need will be cared for, and so on. So and so, some people might call that political, but we don't, you know, it's not about one party.
All right. Now I know Dearborn is really nationwide. Is one of the the largest concentration. That's a good
one. Of, yeah. One, there, one are, of. There are some other cities right. that have.
Now, because I was thinking of Hamtramck, okay, mm-hmm. as another one. Mm-hmm. Now, we did have Rabbi Unik from the Detroit Interfaith. Is that the correct person?
Well, they're probably different Detroit interfaith groups, so I'm not.
Do you have a sister organization in Detroit that from your with your organization?
Actually, we have. I wouldn't say a sister. We are networked with the Interfaith Leadership Council of Metro Detroit.
Okay.
And just went to the their big dinner of the year. Few weeks ago, a month ago, and actually a friend from Dearborn was one of the people who was honored, mm-hmm. Ede Alawan, mm-hmm. who's done interfaith work in Dearborn for many, many years, he and his brother who has since passed. But the way IFLC, the Interfaith Leadership Council, describes themselves is that they are a network of networks.
Okay.
And there are, I couldn't begin to name the number of interfaith networks that there are in the Metro Detroit area.
Right.
And so to say there's one interfaith, I'm not sure okay. which one that is.
Okay. All right. I think, no, your explanation was very good. Okay. Well, from my perspective, you know, it kind of got clarity, that type of thing. Do you feel that Dearborn is isolated because of there being such a large population? That they you're addressing their needs and that things, but does that make them like a fish in a pond that, you know, or is it like a lily pad in the pond where they're not really interacting with the community around them, or is that Mm-mm. something?
I don't see it that way.
Okay. How no. and why so? Why not?
Well, because the people in the Dearborn community, the Arab Americans, since you meant, are engaged in the community in various ways through civic organizations. They are engaged in local politics. We have people on the school board, on city council. So
are they isolated within the county then? So like the Dearborn City is isolated from the cities or the county, or the area, the communities around them.
I would say some maybe, but many are not.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about all of us in our lives, we get pretty busy, and right. we go to the places that we go to, and mm-hmm. then but I don't know. I don't see barriers to be or not or to be. I don't see the local community is being isolated from the rest
okay.
of the.
Okay, all right. That was just a question. Well, getting your perspective on it, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. Because yeah. Dearborn is such a large group, okay, mm-hmm. that sometimes they get self-contained. Mm-hmm. They're perceived as self-contained. That'd be a better way of saying it. And I was just more or less trying to get your feedback on do you see that? And you answered the question, okay?
Yeah. I think the community, as I see it, is strong, and they celebrate their culture, but there's also a lot of give and take in there. I love the Dearborn community in terms of the diversity, and celebrate that, and so there are people that are. You know, there would be people who are involved in all kinds of different local organizations. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay. The person that you mentioned, Awan, okay.
Ed Alawan?
Yes. Uh-huh. Okay. In the article that I read about him, he's also brought out the fact that, which is kind of like when I got into the isolation part, that one of the people that your organization recognized is also a state representative within the Michigan legislator, so that is more pulling out of the thing where it's growing, it's coming outside of Dearborn, so that there's an impact and awareness outside mm-hmm. of the area.
Our one of our local state representatives
Right.
Because of one of my little... One of my other interests currently has to do with gerrymandering, and I was not able to vote for, and I have a good representative at the state level, but because of the shape of our voting district, so he doesn't happen to be my representative because of gerrymandering, but he's, yeah, so a young man and very, you know.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you see... The Dearborn area, and this is more or less kind of like a stepping outside of your organization in particular, but from a perspective of your interaction with the different Arab community stuff, do you see anything like a Charlottesville happening in Dearborn? You know, where they had that kind of a race crisis, the police and that type of
people
thing.
People coming in from outside trying to... Well, we've had that. You know, I've been here long enough to remember the pig head on the stick at the Arab American Festival.
Right.
The people from another group that tried to incite things and then edited videos and put them on their websites to send money now. Send money. Mm-hmm. See how bad it is. Send money for us to do our thing.
Right.
So we have had that.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, it didn't come to like somebody getting killed, and so, but we have dealt with some of that over the years. So
how have you dealt with it?
Well, that's a lot of it. Just encouraging the community, trying to respond in ways that are the most constructive and that don't encourage the outsiders sometimes to make more trouble. And it, actually, when I think because we could relate to it, like when Charlottesville happened,
mm-hmm.
I was part of, and I was a large gathering of people, both the one at the library.
Mm-hmm.
There was a vigil there, mm-hmm. shortly after, and then there was one at University of Michigan, Dearborn,
all right.
and we had people gathered, clergy people.
Mm-hmm.
Public servants, elected officials, Debbie and John Dingell made it to the one at U of M.
Right.
Because it was so important for them to do that.
Right.
And Abdullah Hamoud, our state rep, and various, you know. So Charlottesville did happen to us.
Okay.
In terms of we all feel vulnerable and afraid for our nation,
all right.
because of the divisiveness and the hatred and so on. So Charlottesville did happen to us in that sense, and so that's why people turned out for those gatherings, for those vigils, and were challenged to keep on working for unity and for peace and justice.
All right. So it, you know, people tend not to, I know you said when you started out, you were larger, but then it was kind of like now that was handled, but then you get a Charlottesville to let you know that there's still a need for the mm-hmm. type of effort that you are, mm-hmm. you are involved in. Where do you see your organization going from here?
I'm not sure at this point.
Yeah. What would you like to see your organization do?
I would like to see it grow and maybe take on a few more projects. When we first started out, I had dreams of really working together. And I actually had some friends in the Muslim community, too, that said, maybe work together on something like housing or doing something that would be, you know, get a grant and do something as an interfaith group to address some needs in the community. We haven't had the energy or the time to follow through on that. Part of the thing with the sizes of the groups is like part of that is in our in the culture, fewer people have religious affiliations. You know,
that was something we were talking about.
The
earlier.
Largest group of religious identification or the fastest growing has been like the nuns.
Yes.
And now we call them the duns too. The people been there, did that. I'm done with that. But and so when I first came a little over 20 years ago, some of the bigger Christian churches in town would have a senior pastor and one or two associate or assistant pastors.
Right.
So they had more staff people to divide the work among.
Right.
And so a lot of the churches have been downsized. Catholic churches are sharing between two different congregations,
right.
Are sharing one priest.
Mm-hmm.
So the Muslim community, maybe not as much at this point, but so we have fewer clergy people,
right.
and lay people to draw from who are actively involved in their faith community. So some of that is a reflection of what's going on in the larger society.
Mm-hmm. All right. There's been different kinds of growth and things going on within Dearborn. You know, the art space, which was the mm-hmm. East Downtown Development
mm-hmm.
Authority, and then there's the West Downtown. Is that sometimes having an impact on the community, and then how do you see that impacting what used to be a problem? How do you see that development impacting on what's going on with the Dearborn, and that's building bridges and things like that?
I don't know that I have an answer for that.
Do you see a new growth coming where now the Muslim may not, they're no longer the new immigrants, but there's another type of population that's coming into the Dearborn?
Well, bring in the artists. They're just very creative people. Get them engaged in the community.
Okay.
I haven't really personally met more than one or so of them.
Okay.
But creative people, you know, it's like where their communities, I think, was it happening in Detroit for a while? Some cities will actually have writing contests.
Yes,
And people say, we'll give you this house to rehab if
yes.
you write your
right,
essay. Because
right.
they're trying to attract people
right.
and having artist colonies
right.
to attract people like that. But I just don't know enough about that to say anything that would be knowledgeable.
Okay. Now, I did see that I'm not sure whether it was in your... You have different home pages, and I didn't tag into your Facebook page, but the way you had different panels, the organization would have different panels that they would support, and they would organize for panel or discussions, that type of thing. Is that something that you were doing, or is it something?
That sounds like something we used to do more of it at Littlefield at the church that I serve.
Oh, okay.
We would have things on. I remember at the time the build up to war in Iraq. We had several
okay.
different. We had some speakers with some expertise in that. Dr. Ron Stockton worships with us and is a political science professor, and then maybe through his contacts. Anyway, we had several different panel discussions and things like. The Israel-Palestine conflict.
Right.
We've had speakers for that, and so I don't know if that's what you're thinking of,
okay.
but it's like
I'm
not sure.
Okay, all right. So then, all right. Now we do know that your next meeting is going to be when? Your next it's going to be the third
Tuesday. Let me just look at my look at my phone. Let's see. Oh, well, that's not going to work because I put it on airplane mode. But it is the third Tuesday. I just don't remember.
Okay. You got two ladies with no cameras. And
got it. I just turned it off so that it wouldn't ring while we were talking. So,
all right. Okay.
It is my auxiliary brain. I count on it to tell me when meetings are.
Yeah. I noticed the fourth Tuesday is the 28th. So it's going on the 21st, I think. I think that sounds...
Let me just get it off airplane mode and hope
right.
that it doesn't
okay.
ring.
All right. Well, no, okay. But now, as you're doing that, so if you wanted... the three things that you think has really evolved with your organization has been what, in summary?
Well, I mean, because it's been so gradual, I don't... You know, I wouldn't... but I think we should celebrate that... in the beginning, when it was the Dearborn Area Ministerial Association, and then the Dane Dearborn Area Interfaith Network, over all of that time,
mm-hmm.
it's been a matter of bringing people together,
mm-hmm.
bringing people together for our group, and then
mm-hmm.
hopefully we'll be facilitators to do other things in the community that bring more people together.
All right.
To promote understanding.
All right.
Every time we find a way to come together to say what do our various scriptures say
mm-hmm.
about like that are relevant to what Dr. King proclaimed all those years ago.
Right.
And to hear speakers talk about that. Anytime we now, and there are some houses of worship. Like I know the church that I serve, once a year or so, we have an interfaith service where we'll have a Muslim and a Jew. And me, and so we hear like a couple of sermons, very, very, very brief sermons.
All right.
And we'll have, you know, the Islamic call to prayer, and then sort of a Presbyterian style call to worship.
All right.
And we'll hear from the scriptures from each of our traditions.
All right.
And we'll pray together. Well, when you bring people together and say, you know, we all care about this, we all recognize, and not everybody would agree with that, but those of us who show up for these things all agree that we worship the same God.
Okay.
And so we will pray to our one God about the things that we are, you know, give thanks together for the things we can be thankful for, and we will pray for the things that, and pray for the strength to change the world, to make it better with God's help.
Okay.
So anytime you do that, it's doing, that is not a little thing.
All right. And I think that with that, we're going to be bring our interview to a close. Did you get the date? Did you get that?
Oh,
date?
I just shut that. Oh. I thought we were done. So, okay. December 2.
Okay. Okay. I tell you what.
I don't know.
All right. But they can contact you on Facebook.
They can surely contact us on Facebook.
All right. And under Fran Hayes. Is that it? Or
Dearborn Area Interfaith Network.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
I want to thank you very much for being a part of the interview. And then we will continue on.
Me.
Okay. All right. Very good.
Seems like newscasts only talk about the bad news. I invite you to tune into Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. I'm your host, Lynn, reminding you that Impact airs the second Tuesday of the month, 1 p.m. till 2 p.m. You'll learn about safe house programs, health concerns, local church projects, dealing with holiday grief, even news about pet adoption. So tune in on the second Tuesday of the month from 1 p.m. till 2 p.m. for Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. Remember, the show is podcast. Just go to Tuesday Talk on the WHFR webpage. That's whfr.fm.
Welcome to the new Impact, presented every month by our Dearborn, making waves on 89.3 FM.
Have you ever said, and thought, I didn't know that? Or, that's a different point of view?
Every fourth Tuesday, 89.3 listeners will have the opportunity to learn about the many organizations and people who are doing things for Dearborn and the Tri-County communities in Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb.
Impact is devoted entirely to the issues of interest to the 89.3 listeners.
Impact is part of WHFR's weekly talk show format, presented every Tuesday from 1 until 2 p.m., making waves from Henry Ford Community College radio station, broadcasting on 89.3 FM from Dearborn, Michigan.
Please tune in, and you might find yourself saying,
Not on my watch. Our military service members say, as they volunteer to serve. Not on my watch, they say, as they leave their families behind to keep the rest of ours safe. As they move out, stand firm, and take fire. So not on our watch, we say, to the severely ill or injured veterans who can't get the care they deserve. The therapists they need to walk again. The treatment they need to talk again. The lifetime of day-to-day help they need to live full and independent lives. When there's no more government funding, or a nursing home seems like the only option, or everyone says there's no hope for recovery, we won't leave one warrior behind. Not on our watch. Find out how you can do your part at findwwp.org.
And this is Betty Daniels again talking about Impact. And to let you know that we're going to be starting the first part of an interview that's going to be coming up at our next Impact. So you'll be able to get a taste of what to expect. And make sure you stay tuned for the fourth Tuesday in December, because we got a really special program coming along. So this is Betty giving you a taste of Impact for the next fourth Tuesday. All right, this is Betty Daniels from Impact Fourth Tuesday, and in the studio with me, I have Karen Sheffield from Open Arms. Correct? All right.
Yes.
All right, now Karen.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Karen, what exactly is your position with Open Arms?
I am a director with the Open Arms program. Open Arms is actually under the umbrella of Ascension Health, St. John Providence. We work with community health and anyone within the community surrounding all of our hospitals within that St. John Health System.
All right. And prior to us going on the recording of this broadcast, Karen was asking me, how did her name come about and stuff, and I mentioned Sandy North, and the listening audience knows that Remember Me Quilt has been on different shows with us, and also, you know, Sandy, she's a very enthusiastic, very energetic person.
Yes, she is.
And what came up was that I begin to wonder, you know, do nonprofits who have similar interests, do you work together where you're not really reinventing the wheel or dipping into the same, you know, doing the same kind of project that you might be able to use elsewhere? And then she thought that would be a really good idea to talk about how people do it collaboratively. So we'll get into the collaborative thing as we get down the line, but tell us a little bit about what Open Arms does and just who do you serve?
Well, Open Arms has, for the last almost 20 years now, been providing bereavement services to children and adults.
All right.
It originally was created because they found that children were not really being reached in terms of dealing with their grief and loss.
Okay.
So that's how it came about.
They kind of got lost in the shuffle?
Yes.
All right.
And it's because parents feel like children don't grieve in the same way as adults, and so they don't really try to engage them in any understanding of what grief and loss is and how to deal and cope with it.
All right. Now, how exactly does someone get in touch, come in contact with these children that you're working with?
Well, we go and we are involved in community outreach, as Sandy North is. She certainly is a wonderful collaborator in the community. She certainly has collaborated with us for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And it's people like her and others who are out in the community reaching out to grieving people that tell them about our services, as well as the hospitals, the police precincts, the funeral homes. There are a lot of different people that we work closely with to get the message out.
Okay. If I'm hearing you correctly, then there a purpose or a child can come into you doing different avenues then?
Is that correct? Correct. Sometimes we go to them because there are grieving children within our schools and parents aren't really able to bring them out, and some of them don't want to deal with the grief themselves. So we actually go into the schools and provide grief support in the schools as well.
Okay, now is this something that you have a certain schedule or format as to which schools you go to, or how did you determine which schools you go to?
Well, at the beginning of the school year, we send out a letter to all of the schools in the surrounding communities, Detroit, and all of the suburban schools around Detroit, and let them know about our services, and let them know that if they have identified students that need the services, they can invite us in, and we will come and provide grief support for about 10 weeks free of charge to them.
All right. Now, when you say grief support, what is this support?
We have weekly groups, and in those groups, we deal with specific topics like, you know, what grief is, what are the emotions around grief, how do you handle anger related to your grief, and then how to identify certain emotions, how to express your emotions in positive ways, because a lot of our young people don't always express themselves well, and they don't always express themselves positively.
Yeah, I think it kind of goes with the territory with them being young, that one of their ways to act out feelings is with anger and rage, or physical
Absolutely. That type absolutely. Of thing. And oftentimes parents, teachers, and others don't realize that it's related to the grief.
Okay. How do you explain, identify grief? You know, when a person says grief, how do you help them to understand what that's about?
Well, you first of all, you let them know that any time that you lose a loved one, it is very common for you to grieve that loss. If you love a person, you're going to grieve their, you know, not being present in your life anymore. And with that grief comes various emotions. Sometimes it's confusion. Sometimes it's anger. You know, sometimes there's spiritual elements to it. So there are many things that we address around grief.
So when are you providing service, do you sometimes then maybe have another agency that maybe do another part of that, or do you just all do it through?
Our therapists usually will provide individual family or group counseling, but we really feel that the healing comes about because these young...
All right, this is LaBeth. Just want to give you a taste of what to expect for the next fourth Tuesday. So now stay tuned for our regular programming.
Guys and dolls, you were at the malt shop with Daddy G and WHFR Dearborn. And we're going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop where the jukebox is playing, the kids are dancing. And here we are, back in the 50s.